1893.3 FM K1 930 on a Monday morning. I get to welcome in City Manager Mike Bailey and members of the staff of the City of Bartlesville. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Charlie.
Thanksgiving hangover still hanging over you somewhere along the line?
Officially still have a bit of a Thanksgiving hangover. We're the three of us. This might be a quiet broadcast, Charlie. There's only been about six words said since I picked the two of them up.
Well, that's okay. They will recite when called upon, no doubt.
I'm sure they'll perform when they need to. That's what we're counting on.
We had a small business Saturday. We'll have to wait till we see how the sales tax numbers turn out. But
that is a great. That truly is a great event. Yeah. It's got some big sponsors across the United States, and I love that they recognize those small businesses because. The reality is that is where a majority of the job creation in the country comes from. Mm-hmm. In Bartlesville, we have a very unique downtown that is full of small businesses. I don't know of many communities our size that have a downtown like ours. So.
We see the remnants of what used to be a thriving downtown decades
in a lot
ago.
Of places. Yeah. That's right. You're exactly right. There might still be a diner or something like that, but it's not.
I go back to the community that I grew up in. My dad had a drugstore on the town square.
Oh, yeah.
And, you see businesses there, but they're not the main shopping destinations that they were when grew up, you know?
And of course, Bartlesville is still, we've got our big box and we've got a nice mix, and I certainly don't begrudge anybody their shopping opportunities.
We like those shopping choices.
You know? We love those shopping choices, but it is great to have a day to recognize those small businesses that are so vital to our community. Of course, we've got two, three, I was trying to think on the council, how many small business owners we have. Of course, we have Copeland Appliance, right. We have Dink's, we have Dink's and Sterling's, and we also have Kane Cattle Company is also considered to be a small business.
So, sure.
Our new council member, Paul Stewart, his wife is actually a photographer. She's also a teacher, but she's a photographer. So,
which counts as a small business?
Yep, that's exactly right. So,
self-employed people count as small businesses.
I always have a little bit of admiration for anybody who can be self-employed. There's a lot of risk involved in it for those entrepreneurs.
Pay the whole bill for Social Security.
That's right. Both sides plus 1%. I don't know why that is, but it's there.
Because the legislation was written by big business owners, apparently.
because the law says so. Occasionally we get that answer, and we usually just kind of have to swallow and take it.
You know that there are certain even exams that is the correct answer. You know, back in the days when I used to have to take a FCC exam to do what I do, there was one question on the test: who can keep station logs? And the correct answer was anyone qualified to do so. You know, it's just one of those things. You know,
I like it. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. That's kind of like the who is, we were talking about oaths. We have to administer some oaths of office, and we don't do it very often, so we always kind of have to refresh our memories.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's anyone who's qualified to do so. Yeah. And there's a bunch of us, according to law. So, but speaking of council and oaths of office, we've got our change of council coming up, Charlie.
We do, and reception thereof.
We do. We've got a reception that will be... is that a week? That's a week from today, isn't it?
I had
to think my way through there for a second. Yeah,
is that Thanksgiving hangover?
Yeah, that's it. Still suffering from it. But it's amazing what happens when you shut your brain down for 3 or 4 days. Can't get it started again. Right before next Monday's council meeting, we will have a council reception, and this will be a little bit unique. Normally, we just have the city council, the outgoing and the incoming that we will recognize that night. This one will be unique in that Jerry Maddox, a very long-term city employee who has served as the city attorney for 43 years, he announced his retirement. He'll be retiring. Now, he's only retiring as city attorney. He keeps reminding me that he's going to keep a small practice open. So if you use Jerry for your own business, he's still going to be around. But he will also be celebrating him that night. So outgoing, we will have city attorney Jerry Maddox and, of course, Vice Mayor John Kane. And on the incoming side, we will be replacing Jerry with Jess Kane, a local attorney here. And then we will also be welcoming Paul Stewart, which is the new Ward 2 representative. Of course, Vice Mayor Kane elected not to run for office this term, and Paul Stewart and Ramona Coulson both ran for that, and Paul was victorious, so we'll be welcoming him in that night. If I take just a moment of liberty here, as I look around here, I have Lisa Beeman and Micah Seamers. And Lisa, how long have you been in the city of Bartlesville? 26 or 27 years. And so for us, and pretty much any city employee, Jerry Maddox is the only city attorney we have ever known.
City attorney for life.
Yes. We feel a little bit like children to where we've never left mom and dad's house. We don't know what it's like to live alone. Well, we don't know what it's like to have another city attorney.
Can you trust his guidance?
That's right. Jerry has been a good one, and he really has. He goes beyond just being a legal advisor. Jerry has, I'm sure to all of us at some point in time, has provided some professional advice and some political advice. Anyway, he is invaluable to all of us, and he truly will be missed. Now, that being said, Jess Kane, we've worked with him on a number of issues as well. Very excited to have Jess as a city attorney. I think that the city council chose very wisely.
It's kind of along the lines of, and I have to use my MLB background here, it's kind of like Tommy Lasorda, Dodger for life.
That's right.
Or Stan the Man, Cardinal for life.
It's
just
right.
One of those things that their entire career was with one team.
That's how you identify them.
And here, prosecutor.
Jess Kane actually serves currently and has for several years as the prosecuting attorney for the city of Bartlesville. So we've got a great relationship with him, but it is uncharted waters having the city of Bartlesville. not one person that I know of can remember a time when Jerry was not the city attorney, except for Jerry. And he can vaguely remember a time when he was not the city attorney, but even he can't remember it very well. We asked him that today, said, were you sworn in when you took office? And he said, you're kidding me, right? I have no idea. That was 43 years
who
ago.
Who administered that oath of office?
that was, of course, we've talked a little bit about that meeting and how it was the existing city attorney swore in the entire new council. Of course, there was five new council members. The existing city attorney at that time swore them in, and then the next item on the agenda, the council terminated his services, and then the next item they hired Jerry Maddox. So I have to assume it was not the previous city attorney. I would imagine he left the room at that point. So
one would assume that to be factual.
It was an interesting evening 43 years ago.
I hope it was a pleasant transition.
Yeah. Jerry's a friend and a valuable asset to the city, and he certainly will be missed. And I would say the same about Vice Mayor Kane as well. He came on a number of years ago. Actually, it was a three-party race, one of the few that I can remember in recent memory that we've actually had three candidates. He defeated the incumbent, which was Mike McGrew at the time. John really has been a champion for the city and a very reasonable person. He is always prepared when he comes to council members, which, of course, is a very high compliment. We've all served on boards where we had people who weren't. John is always prepared. He's well-researched. I truly will miss him. I consider both of these men friends, and I just wanted to take a moment to wish them both the best. I'm sure I will see them again, but it just won't quite be the same. As I said, Charlie, we don't know what it's like, but we're going to find out.
There you go.
But we do hope that the public will come out to send both of these two men off and to welcome in their replacements. That is open to the public. It'll be on the second floor of City Hall. I've got a paper here that tells me when it starts, and let's see, it starts at 6 p.m. So it'll be 6 p.m. December 3rd, City Hall, second floor. If you walk in the lobby and you don't see us, that's because we're up just one flight. So come up the stairs, come up the elevator, and join us.
Good idea.
And then, of course, the council meeting will begin at 7 o'clock immediately following that, so the public is invited to join us for both those events that night.
I have to take that elevator ride back down to council chamber.
That's right. We'll have to file back down, but we are expecting a little bit larger than normal turnout, so we went ahead and moved it upstairs. We've got some space, and as I said, hopefully the public will come to welcome our new members and to send our, I hesitate to say old, members off, our previous members. What should I say? we truly will miss both of those guys.
Not a city event per se, but I want to at least mention the names of the Grand Marshals for Saturday's Christmas parade.
Closely tied to the city, isn't it?
Closely tied to the city. That would be former man who sat in the chair that you occupy.
That's
Ed
right.
Gordon, and Chief of Police, who I hear is older than Mr. Gordon.
You hear that often, don't you?
Tom Holland.
Usually from Mr. Gordon. Yes. The two of them will be the Grand Marshals. I think that is, again, a fitting recognition of both of those individuals after their years of service. Now, Ed was here for a number of years. He has served in city government most of his life. In fact, I, on vacation this year, I went and stayed at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and he called me as I was standing there, and he said, "Well, you know, I was there when this place was built." And I'm standing at a gas station looking around. He's like, "Now look over there. Do you see that?" "Yeah, no, that wasn't there. That was the mountain that came down." So it was very, very interesting. He was at Jackson Hole when I believe he said they basically had, they just had crushed rock. That was what the streets were. And now there's a couple hundred thousand people there during the summer. So he's served a long time in municipal government, seen some very interesting things. So again, a fitting tribute to both of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, and speaking of police matters, we've got Lisa here. I know that was a terrible segue. I was trying. I was really looking for something there, Charlie.
I noticed her attire. It is not a police uniform.
It's not a police uniform. She has not been arrested. Let's go ahead and put that to bed right now. She may have gotten a ticket. I don't know.
Get over arraignments, I think.
We got to get her out of here.
I've done nothing.
But Lisa has become the medical marijuana expert for the city of Bartlesville. This has primarily become about zoning, land use, business regulations. There was a law enforcement part of that, but we worked through those rather quickly. Of course, as an employer, there was some, we had to consider it from that perspective. We were able to work through that very quickly as well. But the land use and zoning was far more complicated. So, but the council heard our workshop on, what was that, a week ago? That was a week ago Monday,
yeah.
Wasn't it? So
19th.
Right before Thanksgiving, on the Monday before Thanksgiving, we had a workshop to talk about this in depth. And while the council didn't make any decisions, we'd never do make decisions in workshops, it was a picture became clearer. So, yeah. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you.
Lisa Beeman is
Lovely to be here.
Of course, most people know, but she's the community development director and park planner and city planner. She's many things.
Whatever
and
I need to be.
Medical marijuana expert.
Oh, practically perfect in every way.
Oh,
there
thank
we
you.
Go.
Yes, that's far from truth, but thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I think there's a resemblance to Mary Poppins somewhere.
Oh, thank you. So, yes, the council had actually taken action previously back in September when they passed an ordinance that set forth regulations for people who were licensed by the state of Oklahoma either as a patient or caregiver or as a retail dispensary. But they did not take action at that time about the where and how the city would handle additional commercial licensees for medical marijuana, which would be a commercial grower or a commercial processor, and there's even one for researcher, although that's not going to be near as big of a concern in terms of land use. But the reason they didn't take action was we were kind of waiting to see what the state of Oklahoma was going to do. The state has appointed a medical marijuana authority. Julie Daniels, a former council member of ours, sits on that authority and keeps us in tune with what's kind of happening with them. And we do expect that when the legislature reconvenes in February of 2019, that they will, further define the rules and the laws relating to medical marijuana. But it is clear, based upon lawsuits that have come up in other cities across the state of Oklahoma, that we cannot prohibit, or it's not advised, that we prohibit commercial growers and processors. So we wanted to come back to the council, and we did so on the 19th, just to bring them up to date, kind of where that whole the lawsuits and things like that, the questions and the issues with the state law were, and then to talk specifically if they would like to take any further action on zoning for and the location of state-licensed medical marijuana growers and processors. So those who've already received their state licenses and who might be looking to locate in Bartlesville. And so we had a general discussion, and we had several options. There are several other legal opinions that were provided to the council, including one from the Deputy General Counsel for Oklahoma Municipal Assurance Group, of which the city is a member.
Yep.
Mike can give more detail, but they provide some insurance risk liability,
they,
I guess.
They provide our liability insurance and property as well, but in this case it was primarily in response to the liability risk of municipalities over-regulating perhaps the medical marijuana industry. And so they'd done a great article that drew comparisons to, I believe, 3.2 beer.
Right. Very interesting historical comparisons between the regulation of 3.2 beer many, many years ago and medical marijuana. But the council was given information on that and given some options on what they might want to do or might not want to do. And at the end of kind of that whole discussion, the council appeared to be leaning in the favor of doing an ordinance that would regulate those two businesses, growers and processors, and under the authority that the city is given from the state of Oklahoma for the police powers, which basically that's where all of our authority to regulate land uses comes from, the state's enabling legislation that gives cities general police power. So that's the authority to regulate in terms of promoting public health, safety, morals, and welfare. And so there are things that cities can do. Obviously, anytime you have a zoning regulation, zoning regulations by their very nature limit what people can do with their land. And so when you pass regulations, the law says it's very clear that the regulations have to be uniform for class and kind of buildings. So industrial buildings are all to be treated the same, agricultural uses are to be treated the same, residential uses across their class in terms of, have to be uniform in types in terms of their class and kind of their building. So we do know we can do certain things with regard to regulating those types of businesses, but they have to be uniform and they have to have a legitimate use of the community's police powers. So as long as we can show there's a clear benefit to public welfare. And research tells us that there are laws that have held up in other states dealing with medical marijuana that are a clear benefit to public welfare. So as we look at regulating specifically the industry of growers and processors, which is kind of like an agricultural and an industrial type use, we know that we can regulate those in terms of any public health, safety, welfare. Our building code regulations do that to most extent in terms of structure, plumbing, mechanical, electrical, those types of things. But there are three areas where the law, all of our existing laws are a little vague with regard to medical marijuana, and we know where there is definitely an impact, and that is with regard to odor. Moisture or humidity inside a building and with security. We believe, based upon research with other cities and also based upon some research that has been done by the Oklahoma Medical Marijuana Authority, or the board for the state of Oklahoma and the health department, that there are some legislation and baseline regulations that we could possibly put in, that we could put into effect, that would be legal to help regulate things like the odor, exterior odor from those facilities, as well as interior humidity, and as well as security of the premises. And so the council's asked us to go back and look at that in terms of looking at our legislative capacity, what we could recommend that would be just baseline regulations that would fall under the public health, safety, morals, and welfare, or the police powers. And so the staff will be doing that and bringing something back to the council probably at the December meeting. Yep. And that's kind of where we are with it right now.
And since the legislature doesn't convene until next year,
right,
it's likely that there will be additional action based on whatever the state does or does not do.
That's right.
Sometime between now and, let's say, Memorial Day.
Right. Yes, absolutely. So we think we'll put some things in place, and then we expect the state will provide more guidance, and then we probably will be amending our regulations again as well.
We really don't know where the state will land on this. So that was part of the conundrum that we were facing, is we really hoped that we wouldn't receive any applications for growers or processors until after the state had formalized the rules. That clearly isn't the case. We've received one for a grower.
Yeah, we've received one and already that we're working with them. They have to meet all the building codes and everything else. We have another one that came in on Tuesday after the council meeting. So we know there's another grower that's looking to locate in the area. And so we've been working with them as it is, and we've been advising them that, you know, if you put in a facility, even if it's a dispensary and there is an exterior odor, that becomes a nuisance in terms of property. The state does give the city quite a bit of authority to regulate nuisances in the local environment. And so if there was a facility that went in that didn't control noise or the odor up front, then it would be treated as a nuisance and would be abated on the back end. But everybody we've talked with and worked with has understands the concerns of the community and has so far seemed to be very willing to do what is necessary to avoid problems in the future.
In fact, one of our current applicant was there the night that the council discussed this, and it was very clear that they believe in doing this the right way. All of the things that we were proposing, and in fact, at one point it was they were asked to weigh in. You know, are these onerous regulations? You know what? And they said that any reasonable and well-run business would do these things anyway. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't require it to ensure that if we receive a business who is not reasonable or well-run, that they don't have to meet these same minimum standards. So I think that this is a good balance that Lisa and the council have landed upon that protects personal property rights. It's fair with state law, and at the same time, it protects those around these businesses. So I think we've so far been able to address the majority of the concerns, and I think we're heading in the right direction at this point in time. Of course, come February, if the state law is drastically different than what we have, then we will have a modification at that time. That's the world we live in. This is a very rapidly changing environment. There have been a number of lawsuits that have been settled. There have been injunctions that have been filed. So just in the last month since we considered it the first time until now, it was defined a little bit better. So obviously a big issue for cities around the state trying to wrestle with this. Some have chosen to do nothing, which, as you so well stated, that meant that it falls under our regular zoning, and the community development director will classify it as she would any other business, and we would move on because it is a permitted use under state law. And then other cities have chosen to get a little more extreme. Most of them, in fact, I believe it was Broken Arrow, theirs has already been struck down. Their law was never allowed to be enforced. There was a temporary injunction followed by a permanent one. And so they've been enjoined against even using that law that they passed. So
that was. After that happened, then I think the city of Moore and several other cities that had also passed very onerous regulations came back then and repealed their regulations and are putting it some. It's clear, as much as people don't want to hear this, that if a land use is legal, then it has to be permitted within reason. In the state and in the municipalities, you cannot say, for example, well, you can put in such and this and that, but it has to be, you know, 5,000 feet from this and that, which basically keeps it outside the city limits. You can't do that. That's illegal. But you can limit it in terms of its use, as long as it is something that is uniform for similar types of use. So if you're looking, I hate to say this, but if you're looking to grow medical marijuana inside a building, it would be treated as an agricultural type use, just the same as if you're growing lettuce or tomatoes hydroponically in a building. So we have to, that's what the law means in terms of uniformity. And so we have the authority to regulate those, as long as we don't pass onerous regulations upon those that wouldn't not apply equally to any other type of same class use. So there's a struggle here, and we understand that. And like I said, historically the state has had the same struggle when 3-2 beer was made legal in the state of Oklahoma, and cities said, well, we don't want you to drink 3-2 beer here.
And I don't know the history of all that, so I'm just throwing out a hypothetical example. I assume there were dry counties said not in this county or not in this city, right, or something like that.
Well, 3-2 beer was considered non-intoxicating.
Well, that's true, yeah.
So,
But to your point, Charlie, those counties had voted to be dry and did not want alcohol when 3-2 was passed. And it was essentially
determined
across
to be
the state,
non-intoxicating.
You could have 3-2 beer anywhere, and so that's where these regulations and the conflict arose, was from areas that did not want alcohol within their jurisdiction, and suddenly they were informed that 3-2, well, that's not It's a non-intoxicating beverage by definition. So,
and a lot of the lawsuits that we look back to now as we struggle with medical marijuana, a lot of those lawsuits and their decisions were made based upon the challenges of the 3-2 beer regulations that the state said was legal. So it's kind of ironic, but you know, history does tend to repeat itself,
right.
And we try to learn from it.
We try to learn
we can.
From it.
So I think it'll all pan out in, as it should be. It's just a time-consuming process. So.
Okay. Well, and I think we're heading to a good place with this, and hopefully we'll have a conclusion to it here within the next month or so, Charlie.
I thought you were referring to engineering when you talked about
a good place. I'm heading to a good place here. I've also got Micah Seemers here with me, which is what you were referring to. And Micah, you've got about 4.5 minutes to give a quick project
update.
Hey,
you know
update.
What? That's good.
He was hoping you were going to keep going, Lisa.
I really was. I thought, man, this is going to be great.
She's rolling.
I tried to not to get to that Lisa Beeman moment when, Lisa, you got 90 seconds.
That's so awesome.
Micah, if you can give us a quick update.
Okay.
You now have 4 minutes and 14 seconds.
All right, that's good. Well, we had wrapped up a couple projects. Of course, Tuxedo we wrapped up recently. Johnstone from 14th to 17th is essentially complete now.
Open again.
It is open back up. The downtown landscape project is essentially complete. We lack a few parking signs that the contractor is going to install. So we are wrapping those things up. You can probably notice, too, at Civitan Park, the shelter that we put up there.
Looks very nice.
They're off of No Water Road. Or, sorry, Silver Lake and No Water.
That was a partnership between the city
and Civitan
and
Group.
The Civitan
yep,
Group.
They actually purchased the shelter, and then we contracted out
the installation.
Of that.
So
the local contractor did a great job on that, Urban House. Did a good job on that. And so we got that one completed, wrapped up. And then the ones we'd really kind of have going on right now, we're still working on the Safe Routes to School project, which is a sidewalk project over around Hoover, Madison, that area there off of Madison Boulevard, doing some sidewalk on Amherst.
We have about one of these projects every year through this grant.
We try
Safe Routes to
School. Yeah, we try to.
Another great program.
Yep, extending basically routes for kids to walk to school, provide access to those kids for school. And so we've got that project going right now. We're probably, I was going to say, about 25% complete on that project. We've pretty well wrapped up the work on Amherst, getting close, and moving on to the areas kind of between, I guess, call it Hoover and Sooner Park.
Right.
We're connection there. And then on the back side of those buildings as well, tying into Pathfinder and whatnot. So got that project going. That same contractor will be working on Mountain Road. So once they complete that project, they will actually be doing a mill and overlay on Mountain Road, which is the main route up Circle Mountain. So likely, we kind of expected that project to start a little bit quicker, but a little bit slower on the sidewalk project. Some weather delays on that. We're kind of getting to the bad time of year for asphalt work.
Difficult to do asphalt in snow and freezing temperatures.
Kind of the cards we're dealt right now, so we'll roll with it. But that should be starting probably sometime December, I would think, at this point, most likely, when they get going on that project. The Price Road project, we actually have worked with the contractor. We're going to hold off on starting construction on Price Road between 75 and the roundabout until after the holidays.
Mm.
We had our pre-construction meeting. I think we all agreed it'd probably be best to not shut that road
probably
down
be
until
advisable.
Until after the first of the year. So we're going to be a January 7th start on that, I believe, is the start date for that project. And keep in mind on that project that there will be portions that will be down to one direction.
One direction.
Not one lane, two directions, but actually one direction traffic on portions of that road. So definitely find an alternate route. Again, this will be after the first of the year when that hits. Be a concrete project to try to do away with the bumps, kind of that washboard effect.
Smooth it out.
Yeah,
add a shoulder as well.
Add some shoulders on that. Smooth out that concrete. Reinforce the joints on that. So be a good project. But again, after the first year, that one will get going. We've got a number of projects that are currently in design, getting ready to start. We're actually working on the Kitty Park fence project. I've been working on that, hopefully.
Excited about that.
Trying to get that out for bids here pretty quick so we can work on that in their off season. Get that open back up for them in the spring. So we're going to do a new perimeter fence on that, a new entry for that. And we're also going to tack on some street funds and some Pathfinder funds and redo that, I guess we'd call that Cherokee through there.
Yep.
That runs into Johnstone Park. So kind of tidy up that Johnstone Park entrance through there. And then we also have a parking lot project that's getting us ready to start there by the Kitty Park as well. So that's a CDBG project. Uses block grant, community development block grant funds.
Have a lot of pieces coming together right there.
We're trying to coordinate a lot of moving parts on these projects. So, but again, that should be going out to bid here in the next couple weeks and get that one going.
And real quick, in our last 30 seconds, is there an update on the ODOT bridge project? They're getting ready to switch traffic.
They are close to switching over traffic. So again, it won't be anything exciting other than the fact that your detour or one lane of traffic will be in a little bit different configuration.
It's on the other side. You'll get to try out the new bridge here.
You'll get to test out that new bridge, yeah.
Do we have a date for when that switch is expected to occur sometime next week or so?
I just saw an email on that. I couldn't honestly tell you right now. I'm like off the top of my head.
ODOT sent out last week it was going to be today, but we'll see.
I was thinking it was this week.
I thought. We hesitated to say that.
I saw the 26th.
Doesn't look like that's going to be the case. But
I thought I saw the 26th.
They may surprise us.
We have a meeting on that.
Be sometime this week for sure. So.
Well, that's a City Matters program this morning, guys. Thank you for coming in. We'll see you next month on K1.
American Heritage Bank, now serving the Osage region of Bartlesville, Pawhuska, and Barnstall.
This is KWON Bartlesville and 93.3 FM K227 CQ Bartlesville.